I'm here in the County Hall in Tallaght and I'm talking to Michael Coleman. Michael, we'll start at the beginning. Where did the Colemans come from?
Well, our branch came from a little townland called Maelagh. It's in the parish of Corrie in County Sligo. It's right on the Mayo border, actually. The nearest town would be Tubbercurrie on one side and Charlestown on the other. Not far from John Healy country, right beside where, I suppose, one of the most famous families in our area would have been the Gallagher group of builders, who were very well known in the construction industry. And it would be about 25 miles south of Sligo town. So it's in the right in the south of County Sligo.
Educated by the Christian Brothers?
No, educated by an ordinary primary school up to the 7th class. In those days we did 7th class. And from then went on to the Sisters of Charity in a co-ed school, which was ahead of its time in that regard, in Banada, about 6 miles west of Tubbercurrie. I did right there to Leaving Cert in 1965 and went in on my bike every day. No school buses or anything like that. And so it was the Sisters of Charity that got the secondary education. And unfortunately, the school, like a lot of others like it, is gone. Now it's closed and it's merged with another community school. Two convents merged together and they've just become one kind of hybrid school.
Oh, and did you play with Sligo when you were...
Oh, no, no. Even though the Sligo team never really rose to much fame, they played with Corrie at underage level. Big kick, big catch. The in-between was a problem for me. It's deadly accurate with the freeze. The freeze every time over the bar. Yeah. But the niceties of the game I didn't have too good at all. So I didn't pursue it very much, but I enjoyed it.
Had you an idea in your head what you wanted to do? Or were you were just anxious to get in and get a job at that stage, were you?
Well,
when you left school?
Believe it or not, at that age, I still felt I wanted to be in some form of government service.
Why is that now?
I just don't know. Yeah. I think it was because it wouldn't have been the security of it, because I wouldn't have been too worried about security in the job at that stage. My father was a roads overseer in the county council. Whether that had any kind of imprint on me or not, but I was always interested in public life and things, you know, the news and. We would read the newspapers from a young age, and I kind of had a certain pride, I suppose, in being Irish, I suppose, and felt that I should contribute, that I would be able to contribute something to the public service now. But my first job wasn't in the public service at all. It was I wasn't a recruit in the public service from then at all. I was 10 or 11 years in the private sector. Well, I got this offer of a job as a training manager in a television company that sold and rented televisions as they did then. And also we leased out equipment to theatres and stuff. Mm. The company was called Raymond TV Limited. Raymond was an Athlone man. And he had a shop in Liffey Street. And he had me in as a training manager there. I spent about a year, I suppose, in the College of Marketing in Parnell Square. The money wasn't great. And, of course, as a young lad at that stage, I would be about 19 and a half. Money, you know, you needed a few bob. So I moved on to another company just around the corner called Telefusion. They were a big international company that about 10 branches in Ireland, about 100 in the UK at the time. And I stayed with them, got promoted through them till about 1975.
Mm-hmm. And so, well, television was in its infancy at that. Well, it wasn't. It was there a couple of years now, but still, it was an interesting business enough, I'd say, to be involved.
It was. Of course, it was black and white, and the first year, 1965, I think, and what year? I forget now what year RTE opened. But I know at home in Sligo, we didn't have a television, nor did many of our anybody in the neighbourhood, really. Mm-hmm. And I think in the in December 1965, and we were brought a television home that time. And that was the first television we ever got, was an old Bush 25-inch black and white.
Yes.
And all we had was RTÉ 1.
Yeah.
RTÉ 1. Before that, we used to go and watch the matches in a neighbour's house. They had football matches and things like the Eurovision in a neighbour's house. They had a telly. So we got to them. But it was a very interesting time because you had developments in technology the same way as you have now. Maybe not as... not as quickly, because there weren't, we hadn't got the little cards, the little discs or whatever that they have now in equipment. But certainly there were developments in technology then, and it was an exciting time enough.
Yeah.
And we had all the gear. We sold records and all that. We had a radio program on every Wednesday that for a 15-minute sponsored program, the Telefusion show on a Wednesday afternoon, Larry Gogan.
Yes.
Every Wednesday we'd advertise our latest offers.
Yes, that's right.
So
my goodness, and you were all part of that. But then
all part of that, yeah.
Your life changed then. It took a different...
it did.
Why did you make that decision then?
Well, I suppose at that stage I would have been about 25 or 6. No, it would have been 28 or 9. The company itself had been going through a fairly rough patch in that the English headquarters disposed of the Irish entities to another company. Following that, then a series of takeovers and mergers took place. It was also the era of the cutthroat television retailers, which were underselling us and offering what was on the face of it cheaper prices if you bought televisions. And there were some of them were fly-by-night operators, but the general public obviously will go for a price, you know, no matter what. And we ended up by thinking, you know, this business is a bit shaky. So back came this idea then of the public service thing that was in my mind. And I was lucky enough to get a job with Dunleary Corporation in 1975.
In 1975.
And
what age were you then? I was 28, 29.
And were you married at this stage? No, I got married the following year. And I suppose that also had an effect. I'd also just taken out a mortgage in 1974. So all those things had an impact on looking to the future for permanence and pensionable work.
Well, you know, so. Well, going into the civil service, you were going to wind up in, you know, any part of the country, really, weren't you?
No.
Or did you have a choice where you felt you wanted to?
Oh, no. When I went to Dunleary Corporation, as it was then, it was just a local authority like we are here in Talla. It was a local council for the town. So you were going to be in Dunleary. It was the local service rather than the civil service, if you know what I mean. Our pay and conditions would be similar, grades would be similar, but we'd have it was purely local. Same as we are here, you know, we can in theory get transfers if we ask for them to any other local authority in the country, but you'd have to ask for it, and then you just may not get it.
Yeah.
But in the civil service, it's a bigger. Pool altogether, you know.
But in 1975 in Dunleary, in the public local service.
Council. The corporation.
What was that like working there? You know, how different was it to Dunleary today now?
Yeah, it's obviously like the rest of Ireland, the rest of Dublin, it has changed enormously, you know. But still a lot of it is the same, like the pier and the boats there and the yachts in the harbour and stuff like that. Dunleary, I suppose, as a council, it would have been very similar to a rural council at those stage, at that stage. In fact, you'd hear people in Dunleary during my time there saying they were going into Dublin to visit or something. They were going to Dublin today, you know. I don't think you'd hear that now. Like, it's kind of judged as nearly as being a suburb of Dublin City. But you'd hear people saying that I'm going to Dublin, you know, on the 46 bus or whatever it was.
Because Dunleary was a separate town.
Yeah, and it had its own council. It had its own source of finance. It had its own, the whole council had its own staff by and large. Okay, there were some services that are shared and still are with the rest of the councils here. But
but you went down at the bottom, did you?
Oh, I did. I did. At that stage, I was too old to become a clerical officer. So the only way you could come in was either be a rate collector, a rent collector, or have a professional degree like an engineer or an architect, which I didn't have. So I had my experience as regards all my administration experience in the other job. But so I had to go in at the bottom again and started off as a rent collector. I also got a job as a rate collector, but I didn't reach my number on the panel, and by which time I was already appointed a rent collector anyway. And I was that for 3 years there, and got promoted after 3 years, and that would be about 1978. So it was kind of what I was after, in a way. Going back to, I think, kind of, I had this thing about the civil service at the time, but this was near enough to it.
Yeah. No, it was near enough to it. You were almost content.
I was almost content. Yeah. And
and you were promoted to what position?
At that time, it was it's used to call it assistant section officer, I think we were called then. Now it's called a staff officer, a grade 5.
Yeah.
That would be, you'd be in charge of maybe 3 or 4 staff, and you'd have a certain little function or functions that were totally for you to
look
get
after.
Right and look after, you know. And I was lucky enough in that respect. I have to say, I had done my diploma in the Institute of Public Administration as well in the early 70s, which was a 2-year diploma course. I'd done that there, which helped me enormously, because it opened my mind to local government, to political system, the administrative system of government, and the civil
service. Did you ever think of running for council? Or?
Oh, God, no.
Politics never came into it?
No. Never. I'd have to say, I admire all the politicians that I've ever worked with in either Dunleary or in here in Tallaght, or in town when we were Dublin County Council. No, it's, you can't win. Now, James Dillon, who was the Fine Gael leader one time, said that politics is a vocation second only to the priesthood. And, you know, I think he was right, because it is definitely a vocation. And whereas if you're a TD or at a national level, the money isn't bad and the pension is fairly good.
And there's a lot of perks. Yeah.
A lot of perks, but the pressure is enormous. No.
Yeah.
No. I was very happy to stay on the administrative side. And
What was your brief? What were you doing at that time?
Well, at that time, it was largely to do with I was in the personnel department, and we're dealing with all the HR matters, unions, problems out on site with workmen, people not getting enough, some being left short in their checks or whatever. And I had a boss then who was very experienced and who was very, very patient man, which you'd have to be in that job.
And what was who was your boss?
A man called Larry Galligan. And I owe a lot to Larry, because Larry is retired now. He's still alive and well, thank God, out of Dunleary, but he's retired this last couple of years. And he taught me a lot, because as somebody who would come in from the outside, I was, thought, well, I can change the world in here. But Larry set out the parameters, and not in a bossy way, but in the way that he showed the example himself.
Yeah.
And he was very highly respected. And so Larry went on to be director of services there himself before he retired. But that was the brief then. I remember I used to work on the sick pay scheme for the outdoor workers. We'd have people who we used to have a scheme whereby if you were an outdoor worker and you got sick, you went to the council's doctor, he would give you a certificate or not, for free. The council paid for it.
Yeah.
And so that came in. And it meant that you were covered then for your absence, as an outdoor worker. Now, when I say outdoor workers, men on the roads and the bins. And
were you the overlooker then? You were.
Well, my boss, Larry Wood.
Larry Wood.
And I used to have to prepare the statistics for Larry. And
yeah. So the it was hands on, really. You were out there. You were dealing with the workers
and the unions
and the unions,
shop stewards,
which wasn't easy. I'd say.
No,
was it?
No. I don't think I would be cut out for that type of work, to be honest with you. Requires a lot of patience. However, you mellow with the years, I suppose. As a young person then, I thought that things should be much more simple. And
defined, yeah. Tell me, the unions now would have been very in the 70s and 80s. There were quite a number of strikes in the country.
There were, yeah.
And was that because of pure why? You tell me why. Unions so difficult to deal with?
I suppose it was the era of the free for all as regards wage increases, you know, for a start. And I'm not quite sure when the national wages agreements started first. They're on there now for many, many years. But outside of Tallaght, we didn't have that many strikes at council level now, in fairness. We wouldn't have that many strikes. There would be the odd refuse strike in the city. I can't recall a major strike in Dunleary. But you would have the odd little stoppage, the odd little hiccup, which which if you didn't sort out, you might have had a strike the next day. And it required a fair bit of
Diplomacy.
Now, at my level, you see, I was kind of the feeder of the information. Maybe I would have a contribution to make with ideas or whatever. But the boss, Larry Galligan, was the main man, as well as that time Dunleary had a town clerk, which it doesn't have now, of course, in the reorganisation of local government. You know,
who was the town clerk?
Town clerk was a man called Dermot Hogan, the late Dermot Hogan. Dermot Hogan was his name. And, very able man.
Yeah, and it took an able man, did it?
To
be in that position.
Larry Dermot and the manager at the time was a man called Herbie Byrne. They dealt with these situations at that level. A lot of the time, of course, the smaller little stuff would get dealt with locally by people like me, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was a great experience. You'd end up in the Labour Court hearings, being there, listening to what was going on, taking notes in at rights commissioner hearings, and so it was interesting stuff, especially for a young fellow like myself that had no experience of this.
Was that good grounding for
you? Oh, certainly was. I think, in fact, I can thank Larry and the Corporation of Dunleary as it was then, because it was, I think, it might have been probably the best department for somebody like myself who had no experience of local government to come into and to get an overview of what was going on, because we had, it wasn't called HR then, it was called Personnel Department. Yeah. And we had an overview of the staff numbers and the sections and the pay scales and all that type of thing. And so it was good, but I moved on from there then.
What year did you...
Late 1979, I went for an interview in... In those days, they used to have what they call these joint interview boards, whereby the City Council, the Dublin County Council, the old Dublin County Council, and Dunleary Corporation, as it was then, would have interviews for a certain grade at administrative level. And they would form a panel of people then that were successful. And depending on how the vacancies arose, number one might go to Dunleary, number two might go to the city, number three might go to the county, that type of thing. Or you could have, as often happens, you would have big chunks of them moving because at that time the whole county was expanding and the role of local government was expanding.
Yeah.
In the early days. So that was 79. I was successful, not at the first attempt now, lad. It was the second or third attempt, but I was successful anyway. And in getting appointed into Dublin County Council, late 79, I was made permanent in February 1980. in Dublin County Council. And there ever since, more or less.
Well,
in a different form, of course, now.
When you arrived in there in 1980, now, it at that stage, it was still Dublin Council. It hadn't broken up into different sections.
That's right. That's right.
And so you had an experience of Dublin Council running the entire county of Dublin.
Entire county, yeah. With the exception of Dunleary Corporation, of course.
Oh yes.
And
yes.
There was town commissioners in Balbriggan, which is a smaller little local authority at the time. But by and large, you had Dublin County Council and you had Dunleary Corporation. And Dunleary Corporation boundary, if you're going out the Merrion Road, out that area, picked up at the Merrion Road or on the Bray Road, and everything, the rest of the way out to sea was Dunleary Corporation.
Yes.
And all back from that was the county, except where you had a kind of what you'd call maybe a crescent shape around the city, where all around on the outside of the crescent was the county, you see.
And was one. Everything else to the east was not your responsibility.
It was the city of Dunleary. Or Dunleary. Now, that changed, of course.
But your responsibility was what?
Well, when I moved into the county council, I got a job in the computer section, which was a grade 6, which was a senior staff officer at the time. And at that time, there was about 40 staff working in the computer section. A lot of them would have been what they used to call punch operators, where they would punch in the information into the computer via a tape. The cards had gone before I came. So I do remember those seeing boxes of the cards in the department when I arrived, of the old punch cards, where I think what used to happen, now I'm not that technically minded, but the cards were loaded up into the punch card machine, the information was there on the sheet, you keyed it in accordance with you got the information, and you then brought down that batch of cards, and they were read into the computer by means of a card reader, which gave the information into the computer. That had stopped when I arrived.
Well, we came, when you think of how far we have
how far we are now.
Arrived, yes.
Yeah.
But that's how it worked at the time.
It was. Well, just before I arrived.
Yep.
But then it had advanced then to a stage where we had these tape drives, where they were put onto, there was these solid, big solid discs, first of all, and it was keyed into a disc at the input stage, then loaded up onto a tape, a big tape machine, and that in itself then, this is a very simplified version of what happened now, loaded the stuff via the software into the machines. And we had a computer room, there was the mainframe computer was, was the size of a small car, I suppose, you know, grinding away all day. And it was, all the other machines, all the tape machines, there were various things going on for rates, payroll, housing rents, housing loans, there were all this activity was going on there. And the people that I was in charge of had the responsibility of inputting the stuff at the input level and outputting it then from the computer room, even though I myself wasn't a computer expert or trained at all. I was an administrative person that dealt with the supervision of all that process and the supervision of the staff, which would be about 40 or 45, I think, at the time. And I paid the bills, paid the leases, paid the repairs, looked after the air conditioning, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So in itself, it was interesting, although it wasn't what I would call, it wouldn't have been the department I wanted at the time, you know.
But you were working your way, or at least
I was. But I suppose
how many years were you doing?
Now, I actually looked for a transfer then in 1983. And I got a transfer in 1983.
So 3 years.
3 years, yeah.
Yeah,
so
did you find it tough going?
Not really, because I'd made a good few friends there. And the boss was the late Joe Kennedy. Joe was a nice man to work for. And I would have difficulty understanding some of the technical processes. But we had programmers and systems analysts there, some of whom are still with us here, who would advise you and stuff like that. But one of the big jobs we had also was always to have a stock of paying orders for to pay the wages. If you ran out of checks, it was the biggest boo-boo you could make, because it meant the staff didn't get paid on the Thursday or the Friday, and you could have dire consequences. So you always kept a very close watch on your stock of paying orders.
Yeah, because it was quite a large staff, I'd say. Have you any idea what number?
Well, I think the staff at that time were in around the 1,500 in Dublin County Council. And I had come from Dunleary, where there was a staff of 150. That included all the administrative staff and everything. But we came into a Dublin County Council at that time, and certainly later on into the 80s, where the council and the county was about to take off. I know it was the era of the hair shirt budgets and stuff later on in the 80s, but
really it was on the starting blocks, wasn't it?
It was on the starting blocks. The staff numbers were increasing all the time. And got the transfer anyway to the development department at the time, which was brilliant. It was a great department to be in, because we at that stage were acquiring land for all the road developments, the parks, and the housing schemes, which we see all around us now on the ground. But in those early days, I was in the housing end of it, where we would be buying land for housing estates, and the other sections within the park would be buying land for roads, and others then for parks and open spaces. So it was the era of the CPO in the Dublin County Council at that stage.
Well, that was exciting because you had a lot of rezoning, didn't you, for housing? And
there was a huge demand for housing. And although we hadn't come into any kind of an economic upturn or anything at that stage, still the demand was there for housing. The city was expanding, the county was expanding. We had, I suppose, if you like, post-war, we hadn't changed very much. You know, the county hadn't changed at all for a long, long time. Indeed, the old days, the council chamber at that time with Dublin County Council was at 11 Parnell Square. I don't know what the numbers of councillors were, but I know it was nowhere near the number it ended up. The elected members, there was 78 elected members in Dublin County Council, which was, I think, it was the second biggest elected assembly to the Dáil at the time.
And when you were looking for planning, or when you were looking at property space,
yes,
for building on,
yes.
What kind of advice, or who did you go and get advice from, or did you work yourself on this?
No, well, obviously we had a large input, but you would obviously look at land that was it. If to look at the zoning first of all, you would maybe somebody might have identified land that might be for sale, even on the paper, or if we had a road scheme, for example, say one of the early ones was the Palmerstown bypass, which came up from Chapel Hill, but the Palmerstown was the county end, and that was one of the early bypasses that was done in Dublin, and that would have been a CPO of, I suppose, relatively small strips of land along a linear area, which would require a CPO, because generally speaking, you might get maybe 3/4 of the people to sell by agreement, but you'd maybe have one or two or three or four in between that wouldn't sell. So if you had a CPO power, you had power to take it over compulsorily. Okay, the person got compensation, of course. Yeah. But as regards identifying land for sale, the identity came through the development plan at the time, what the zoning was, what the demands for housing would be, and then you'd have the consequent demands for roads and public spaces. So we dealt a lot through the planners, through the engineers who would know whether there were services available like water and drainage. So it was a constant liaison with our technical staff. Then the manager may or may not decide, well, we'll go for a CPO on that land. In which case, if that was the case, yes, we went and did all the necessary servicing of notices, went through the whole process, maybe had a public inquiry,
yeah.
all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it was great. It was a great experience for a fella like myself, or anybody for that matter. At that stage, 1980, after 1983, that was all during the 80s, that was happening. And I felt I had gained a lot of experience that I would have got maybe had I been in the service earlier. I'd done a good bit of catching up at that stage. I hadn't been, never worked in the finance department. And to this day, I never worked in the finance department. But it was a good experience. You learned how the system worked from a political point of view as well. You had to go to meetings occasionally with the members in the council chamber with your boss.
But you saw the development, and you saw, I suppose, you were responsible really for the way Dublin was shaping, especially down here in South Dublin.
Yeah.
You were watching now the.
Well, South Dublin hadn't happened then as such, hadn't happened. But in the Dublin County, which was a big county, we had, you could see the development shaping up. You were part of a team that was involved in that. And it was part of maybe, I won't say hundreds of people, but certainly 60 or 70 people, including managers, architects, planners, engineers, and administrators like ourselves. We were all part of a process that put these things in place.
How well did that team gel?
Oh, it gelled very, very well. Well, okay, I mean, we wouldn't agree on everything, but the manager had the overall say at the end of the day, or your own, at that stage, or what we used to call principal officers. He would lead the way. He would be the main person in the department. Say he, so it's always a he then, there are a few she's nowadays, you would present the stuff up the line to him, and but you had a role to play. You did have a role to play, and looking back on it, you feel, well, you know, it was an important little role. Enough at the time, you probably didn't appreciate how important it was, but you look back now and see the way the county has developed, and say, gosh, I remember when we were making that CPO, you know. And when you get to a certain age, you know, you can remember more things because more things have happened.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until the Better Local Government process came in 1993, when the county was broken up into three. Then that's when South Dublin came about.
Yeah,
that South Dublin was South Dublin County was established on the 1st of January 1994. And we all moved out here then. We split from our colleagues in the main offices in town. And the South Dublin people came here. The North ones went to Fingal. And the rest went to Dunleary.
Well, can I say here now, Michael, at this stage, that you brought me right here now to tell it. 1994.
Yeah. And we moved in here. Yeah. We split up internally first in town,
yeah.
As a unit. And then we all moved out in April and May 1994.
Okay. Well, can I stop you here and say that, because it is going to take a bit of time, but I would like to do part two.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
You.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very important to get in more detail what was going on here in South Dublin when you moved out.
Yes. Sure. Indeed, because as even from my days in the private sector, I can remember parts of South Dublin as a rural county. I can remember the Belgard Road as a windy, dark road with potholes. You know,
I'm looking forward to the second recording, Michael, already.
I hope I haven't...
No, not at all. Thank you very much.
Anyway,
thank you.
Morris.